You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. I'm your host, Lucas Han. Today is Wednesday, July 19th, 2017, and we're here with a kind of delayed first episode of the week. We're in kind of a weird transitional period of the summer in between the crazy activity of the late June, early July off season, and getting into the late July, August, September, what I call the dead period. Because really the off season in the NBA is just as full of news and excitement as the season. There isn't basketball, which is kind of funny because it's the Basketball Association, but you know, just, I mean, from my perspective, someone who covers the NBA, there's more traffic during July than any other time of the season except sometimes the playoffs. So, really, you know, fans care a lot. People are very invested. I probably work more hours during July than any other month of the year. So, it just goes to show that, you know, the off season is a little bit of a misnomer compared to other sports where the off season isn't super exciting except for maybe like draft day or one or two big signings. The NBA offseason is full of rumors and speculation. But now that's kind of coming to an end here on July 19th. The Clippers have a 14-man roster. They've announced and introduced their free agent signings. And it sort of feels like they might be done. I thought they were done before they signed Willie Reed on Monday. And so, you know, maybe they sign one more minimum salary guy, but it's not going to be like this a huge sexy acquisition. There's always the outside chance that they pull off a trade. You know, they are still looking in terms of Lou Williams and Wesley Johnson being the two most expendable guys. Lou because the Clippers sort of have a lot of combo guards, and Lou is the fourth of the four combo guards. But they can't give him away for nothing. They'd be more looking to kind of trade him in for a real, like, 2-3 wing player with size as opposed to Lou Williams being a 6-1 combo guard playing behind Patrick Beverley, who's a 6-2 combo guard, Milos Stojadinović, who is a 6-5 combo guard, and Austin Rivers, who's a 6-4 combo guard. You see the redundancies there. Lou Williams is, like, fourth of those four guys, and if they could move him for a guy who is in a little bit of a different mold, in that 2-3 wing mold, I think they would jump at that opportunity. But they can't just give him away. Wesley Johnson, the Clippers would kind of like to just give away and get rid of his salary, where he's owed $5.8 million this year, $6.1 million next year, and doesn't really figure to be a part of the team's plans. It's not the worst thing in the world to have him there on the third string, combo forward with a lot of NBA experience, who knows the team defense. But if they could move him and get some relief under the luxury tax threshold and even open up a little bit of room for themselves to use part of that trade exception they got from the Chris Paul deal, I think they would be interested in all of those opportunities. But for now, like I said, the smart money is probably on them being done. With this 14-man roster, they're right around the luxury tax threshold. I'm not sure exactly how they get under, but they're right in that. Right now, I have them in my numbers at like $120,000 over the luxury tax threshold, which says to me that probably some of my numbers are wrong, or they have some tiny trick up their sleeves to get themselves underneath, because $120,000 is really not very much in terms of NBA salary and NBA team building. So it's very, very, you know, it's very, very easily possible that my numbers for Danilo Gallinari and Blake Griffin, you know, their new contracts, which are guesses, you know, a little more than guesses, educated guesses. I do a lot of math. I know what the maximum salaries are. I know what the Clippers could have offered Gallinari with the salary matching in that trade they made. So I made, you know, some educated guesses on those numbers. But we'll see. Normally, Eric Pincus of Basketball Insiders gets the real numbers very accurately. I haven't known him to have a lot of mistakes. And he's been working with NBA TV. He was there in Atlanta for the draft. I know he was in Las Vegas for the summer league, but he was also in Atlanta helping them cover the salary cap ramifications of some big free agency stuff. So hopefully now he gets home to LA, he gets settled down, we'll see him updating those Basketball Insider salary pages, and I can sort of double check my numbers, make some small revisions, and see where the Clippers really stand. But for now, yeah, I think they're probably done, unless I think they might look to make a trade mid-season. But other than that, I wouldn't, you know, I would say smart money, they're probably more likely done than not done. They're probably going to carry this 14-man roster plus the two guys that they're going to have on two-way deals, Jameel Wilson and Isaiah Hicks, who can each come up for chunks of the season. You got to consider the 14th and 15th guys on the Clippers team last year, Bryce Johnson and Diamond Stone, played like a combined 33 minutes. So the Clippers are probably fine with only having 12 veterans on their roster, and then plus Juwan Evans and Sindarius Thornwell as guys number 12 and 13. They can probably get away with it, because you look at what they got out of spot 15 last year, which was essentially Bryce Johnson. He played, what, 9 minutes? Yeah, I think if you need 9 minutes from the forward position, you can go ahead and call up Jameel Wilson or Isaiah Hicks from their two-way contracts for a few games. That's, you know, that's beyond even remotely being an issue. I don't think that 15th roster spot is a necessity for the Clippers by any means. Now, if you want to see these Clippers when they finally get into action in the NBA preseason and the NBA regular season coming up, buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there is a better, simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats. SeatGeek is designed to make life easier for the ticket buyer. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, though, is that my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code LONBA today. That's promo code LONBA for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. So now let's talk a little bit about the Clippers' newest addition, Willie Reed. Because this is really, you know, we've had a couple shreds of news, I guess, over the last few days. The Clippers officially waived Kyle Wiltshire, which I had said was, you know, just a formality waiting to happen. He had a non-guaranteed contract. The trigger date to make it guaranteed was August 1st, and he essentially, because his salary couldn't be re-aggregated in a trade for 2 months after he was acquired, the Clippers were never going to be able to trade him, and he was never going to make the roster, so waiving him was only a matter of time. They decided to take him to Summer League and then release him, whether they legitimately wanted to look at him, or maybe they felt like it was, you know, they could do right by him, if you will, by giving him a chance to get some exposure in the summer league before they cut him. I don't know, but that was a foregone conclusion from the day the trade was made. The last player from that trade, DeAndre Liggins, who is still technically on the Clippers roster, also has a non-guaranteed deal, but he doesn't have a trigger date. So it's likely that the Clippers will carry Liggins into training camp just because they could potentially use his non-guaranteed salary to help with salary matching in a trade. You can't aggregate a guy's salary in trade, which means you can't combine him with other players for 2 months after you get him. So because the Clippers got him in late June, they would not be able to combine him with someone else to trade him again until late August. But that leaves them with September, October, and part of November, where he's tradable before they actually have to pay him anything come opening night of the season. So I expect that they'll keep him around, possibly through training camp. You know, Liggins is a veteran. He's been a role player, a fill-in guy on teams before. It's possible that if the Clippers end up with some injuries in the preseason, they could keep him in the early part of the year. If he's impressed in training camp and preseason, it's possible they could trade him. The most likely scenario remains that he'll be cut before opening night, but it's just a little bit of an option, a little bit of flexibility. Kyle Wiltshire and then Darren Hilliard, who the Clippers waived before July 1st, they both had trigger dates. Hilliard's was July 1st, Wiltshire's was August 1st. So those guys had to be released, otherwise they would have been stuck paying them. The Clippers aren't going to be stuck paying DeAndre Liggins until opening night, and even then, they only have to pay him for that day. And then finally, on January 10th, his contract will become guaranteed for the rest of the season. But so they could keep him through November and December, just paying him per day and not really worrying about having that big $1.5 million cap hit on the books for the full season. But so, and then the other thing that we heard is that obviously the Clippers signed Jameel Wilson to a two-way contract, which will allow him to go back and forth between the Agua Caliente Clippers of Ontario and the Los Angeles Clippers. The Clippers are also reportedly looking at making Isaiah Hicks a two-way player. We heard that the Clippers reached an undrafted free agent deal with Isaiah Hicks on draft night, but we don't know exactly what the terms are. It's possible that they signed him to a two-way contract immediately. It's possible that they signed him to, you know, or that they just reached an agreement that they would sign him eventually, depending on how the summer played out, and now they'll sign him to a two-way contract. It's possible that they signed him to a minimum salary non-guaranteed contract with a clause in it which is called an Exhibit 10, and the Exhibit 10 clause would allow the Clippers to sort of option that contract into a two-way deal. So there's a lot of different possibilities, but it seems like Isaiah Hicks is going to end up on a two-way deal. It seems like Sindarius Thornwell is going to join Juwan Evans on the Clippers' main roster. And then the other piece of news that we got, which was a little bit surprising, after the Clippers introduced their free agents on Monday, we got the announcement that they had signed another free agent, Willie Reed, a center who played the last couple of years, or the last season with Miami, the year before with Brooklyn. He had been around for a while. He's 27 years old, now joining the Clippers as a 27-year-old. But I think he'd been on the roster of the Grizzlies and Sacramento Kings, but never actually appeared in a game for them. He's been in the D League, but he came up for Brooklyn in the 2015-16 season, and he did about as well as you could hope for a D League call-up to do. He played 39 games. He averaged 11 minutes a game. He averaged 5 points and 3 rebounds, which translates to 15 points and 10 rebounds per 36. Pretty solid for a mid-season D-League call-up. And he plays a very similar style to DeAndre Jordan, while obviously not being DeAndre Jordan, where he doesn't do much from outside the paint, but he's an athletic finisher, he blocks shots, that sort of deal. He's kind of this prototypical modern center, where maybe the old-fashioned center would be a guy like Cole Aldrich, who isn't super athletic but is big and strong and scores from the block, and maybe a more, you'd see more athleticism from the forward spots. But now we're getting these athletic centers. The league is kind of going away from super strength, and you see guys like DeAndre Jordan, Clint Capella being more of a, you know, Rudy Gobert being more of a model for the modern center. And Willie Reed is sort of in that vein. But obviously he's no DeAndre Jordan or Rudy Gobert. But he was really good as a backup for Miami last season. He played 15 minutes a game. He averaged 5 points, 5 rebounds, and almost a block in those 15 minutes. So, you know, when you project that out to per 36... that's pretty good. 13 points, 12 rebounds, 2 blocks in per 36. That's like kind of the Cole Aldrich thing. When the Clippers signed Cole Aldrich, people were doubters. A lot of people were real Cole Aldrich doubters. But his numbers were good. He produced. Maybe he didn't play the most appealing style of basketball. Maybe he was this big, unathletic white guy, but he produced. Willie Reed doesn't quite have doubters, you know, this signing the same way the Cole Aldrich signing did. But it's the same kind of thing where what you look for a backup center is almost one of the biggest things for me is just permanent rebounding. Can they rebound when they're on the court? And this is one of the things that actually really worried me about Montrezl Harrell, is that he only averaged for Houston last year 7 rebounds per 36 minutes. And keep in mind, that's a team that plays a very high pace, so it's a lot of possessions, and he's not getting a lot of rebounds on a lot of possessions per 36 minutes. Willie Reed, 12 rebounds per 36, very solid. So this is a good signing. They got him for the one-year minimum, which means that he's going to make $1.5 million. The Clippers cap hit is going to be $1.5 million because that's the 2-year minimum. But it's a very good deal. It adds a lot of depth to the front court. You look at the Clippers front court now, they've got Gallinari, Griffin, and Jordan, which is like maybe one of the best 3-4-5 starting lineup combos in the league. And then in the bench, you've got Decker, Bryce Johnson, Willie Reed, Montrezl Harrell. So 4 solid athletic backup guys. Decker, Bryce Johnson, Harrell are all 23 years old. Willie Reed is 27 years old. And then as kind of the 8th backcourt guy in more of a reserve spot, you have Wesley Johnson, who, like I said, he doesn't figure to be in the Clippers rotation this year, but he's certainly been a rotation caliber player in the past, not last season, but the season before that with the Clippers, and then before he came to the Clippers with the Lakers, he was absolutely a rotation caliber combo forward. And, you know, it may be as your backup small forward, if he goes into the season as your 10th guy, you're thinking, man, this is not great to have Wesley Johnson as your 10th guy. But to have him as your 12th guy, that's pretty exceptional depth, really, to have him being a third string player. So I think what's more interesting than whether or not the Clippers have front court depth is how they'll split up the minutes there. Because I think that of those 7 players that I listed, you know, Wesley is obviously number 8 because of his age and lack of production. But of the 7 in the front, Bryce Johnson seems to me to be the least impressive individually. He has a low motor. He's the only one who hasn't proven himself in an NBA rotation role. Obviously, Gallinari, Griffin, and Jordan are going to be the 3 starters. And they may even end up being the Clippers' 3 leading scorers, depending on DeAndre's role in the offense. If not, they'll be at least Griffin and Gallinari should be the Clippers' 2 leading scorers for sure. Griffin number 1, Gallinari number 2, I'd expect. And Jordan will be the team's defensive anchor, as always. But you start sifting through these guys trying to figure out a backup rotation. I feel like, Willie Reed last year proved himself as a high-quality NBA backup. Montrezl Harrell proved himself as a high-quality NBA backup. Sam Decker proved himself as a quality NBA backup. Bryce Johnson hasn't done that yet. And that doesn't mean that he shouldn't get an opportunity if he earns it in training camp and practice, but it just means that from this perspective, sitting here in July outside of the practice gym, not knowing what Bryce looks like in practice, and having only seen him in the summer league where there were a lot of question marks, he seems to me to be number 7. But what's interesting is that then you're putting a lineup basically together where Willie Reed and Montrezl Harrell are going to be sharing minutes. And I'm not sure how that works offensively, because people have said forever, Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan, they aren't great fits for each other offensively. And that's kind of bogus, because Blake has developed a very strong jump shot, and he's always been a really skilled ball handler with perimeter skills. So it's like the spacing has been fine. And because of DeAndre Jordan being so athletic, like not even just an athletic finisher, but such an exceptionally athletic finisher, he has what I've referred to in the past, if you listen to the show, as vertical spacing, where he can jump so high that in order to prevent lobs, guys have to play so close to him that it helps alleviate the spacing problems caused by having a guy who can basically only dunk on the offensive end. Willie Reed and Montrezl Harrell, neither of them are Blake Griffin with perimeter skills, and neither of them are DeAndre Jordan with, you know, in terms of being able to really finish those lobs so high above the rim. Now, they're both athletic, but neither of them are as athletic as Blake and DJ. Neither of them are as skilled as Blake. So it'll be interesting to see, if they do play together, how that sort of meshes. Maybe between the two of them, they can just bring enough energy and explosiveness that it'll sort of help mask that wart of the spacing fit. I mean, that's certainly not unreasonable, you know, in my mind. Second units are flawed. Backup players in the NBA are flawed. That's how it goes. So you just try to search for players who complement each other. In that sense, it might be a little more logical to pair sort of a shooting big man with one of these around-the-rim, aggressive, athletic finishing guys. But these guys are both good backups, so maybe just the talent can make it work, and then you get more of a scoring help from the guards. You run a lot in transition, or you play a guy like Milos Teodosic with them, who can really make creative passes to cutters, which helps alleviate a lack of spacing. Or maybe you put them out there with guys like Patrick Beverley and Austin Rivers, and you really go with a tough defensive lineup with these two guys in the back and slow down opposing second units. But it'll be really interesting to see that fit, especially with a guy like Sam Decker at small forward, who is an inconsistent shooter. And I have high hopes for Sam Decker as a shooter. You know, he's had months last season where he was in the high 30s. He had months where he was in the 20s. For the year, he was at 32%, which is below average. I have hopes that, I think he had a wrist injury last year for part of the season. So, you know, hopefully a year of improvement, a year of health, he can get that three-point percentage up. But if he struggles shooting the ball, and the Clippers' other option at small forward is Wesley Johnson, who we know struggles shooting the ball, then the spacing could get really tricky. And that's where it comes in, you know, going back to Bryce Johnson, is probably, I mean, I would say safely the best mid-range jump shooter of those three backup bigs between Bryce Johnson, Willie Reed, and Montrezl Harrell. Bryce Johnson is the best jump shooter, in my opinion. But he's the worst player overall. But he's 23 years old, and he's a Clippers first-round draft pick who you'd like to develop and see in the rotation. And Lawrence Frank even said that he thinks Bryce will contribute to the NBA team this season, not just, you know, because he was being asked about sending young guys down to the D-League, and Lawrence Frank said, we think Bryce is going to contribute to the big league team this season. So it'll be interesting to see where that all fits. And Willie Reed, who I think is probably the best of that trio, is the one who the Clippers don't have long-term control over, because he'll be a free agent again next summer. The Clippers won't have his bird rights or even his early bird rights. He'll be an unrestricted free agent, and if he has a really good year, he'll look for money. I mean, he was looking for money this season, and it didn't happen. So it's impossible to know what the market for him is going to be like next summer. But we know for a fact the Clippers have Montrezl Harrell as a restricted free agent next summer. So they have long-term control with his bird rights. We know for a fact that the Clippers have two more years of Bryce Johnson on his cheap rookie deal after this season, and then he'll hit restricted free agency. The Clippers have a lot of long-term control, and then even Sam Decker is going to hit restricted free agency at the end of his rookie deal with bird rights. So the Clippers have a lot of long-term control over Sam Decker, Bryce Johnson, and Montrezl Harrell. Sam Decker, you know, Decker and Harrell were Houston's draft picks, but because they were traded to the Clippers, all of their, you know, the Clippers basically have them as if they were their own draft picks. They have them on those advantageous contracts with restricted free agency and bird rights, because that all transfers in the trade. Willie Reed, who was signed as a free agent, they'll have as much control over him as they had this summer over guys like Raymond Felton and Mo Spates. So, you know, I don't think that Doc Rivers is necessarily one to coach games with that in mind, but I think that it's definitely something that could end up being impactful long term if we see Willie Reed getting a lot of minutes and Harrell and Bryce Johnson not getting a ton of opportunities. Well, Willie Reed, if he's playing really well, will be gone next summer, unless the Clippers open up cap room to keep him or use their MLE to keep him, which would be a dubious choice considering who they have as their starting center. The other option would be maybe if Willie Reed and Montrezl Harrell and Bryce Johnson and Sam Decker are all have a good showing this season, maybe the Clippers choose to move on from DeAndre Jordan. Now, it's going to be a downgrade, but if they can trade DeAndre Jordan and get an upgrade at the wings and they feel like they're solid with Blake Griffin, Willie Reed, Bryce Johnson, Montrezl Harrell as their four big men, it's an option. But I think for now it's definitely some uncertainty with this backup big rotation, because like I said, Willie Reed I think is the best of the three, but he's the only one who the Clippers don't have long-term control over. So you'd hate to give him minutes while Harrell and Johnson don't get a chance to play, and then he leaves and now Harrell and Johnson basically just wasted a year, and these are two guys who you might have each for the next five seasons. They're both 23, Willie Reed's 27. But it also presents, you know, an interesting wrinkle. I've been a proponent of putting Bryce Johnson in a position where he has to earn minutes. I don't want to make it impossible for him to get minutes, which is what I felt like, you know, the Clippers were linked with Zach Randolph. If the Clippers designed Zach Randolph, I feel like Bryce Johnson wouldn't have had chances to get playing time, because Zach Randolph is significantly better than Bryce Johnson. But a guy like Brandon Bass, I thought, was more reasonable, because Bryce Johnson should be able to earn minutes over Brandon Bass. And if he can't earn minutes over Brandon Bass, then we would be glad to have a guy like Brandon Bass, because otherwise Bryce would be so bad that he'd be kind of dragging the team down every time he went out on the court. So this is an interesting position for all three of these guys. Willie Reed, in a contract year, has a lot of incentive to play hard and make sure he earns these minutes. Montrezl Harrell, also in a contract year, entering restricted free agency next summer, looking to kind of force the Clippers to give him that qualifying offer. He has a lot of incentive to play hard and earn minutes. And Bryce Johnson, a first-round pick in his second season trying to prove himself, I feel like he's going to have to fight past these two guys. And if he can, and if he really earns minutes over Harrell and Reed, then he'll definitely be... it'll definitely be worth playing him. We won't have to worry about potentially force feeding a guy minutes who isn't ready. But at the same time, it could prove a little tricky for him to earn minutes over these two guys who both have a year of experience as NBA role players and who are both in contract years playing for a lot of money, where Bryce is relatively, you know, what he does this year won't really impact how much he ends up making in his career, because he has two more years on the cheap for the Clippers. And so let's say he has a great year this year and then drops off, no one's going to pay him when he hits free agency 3 years from now. Let's say he has a bad year this year but then has a great fourth year, he'll still get paid when he hits free agency. So it'll be interesting. It'll be a test of Bryce Johnson's motor, I think, because we've definitely seen that as an issue in his career at UNC and with the Clippers. You know, I've called him casually athletic or lazily athletic, kind of in the same vein of Wesley Johnson, where he has it but he just doesn't show it very often. So we'll see if he can put it to work this year. That's going to do it for this episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. I don't think we'll have a Thursday episode unless there's news, but we will cap off the week with a Friday episode. Since this episode's kind of coming late in the afternoon on Wednesday, I figure this will serve as like a Wednesday/Thursday episode. And then Friday we'll have a new one, and then we'll see next week about kind of fully transitioning into, again, what I call the dead period, which instead of focusing on what's happening in terms of rumors, etc., we more look back on the offseason, evaluate the deals that the Clippers gave out, talk about sort of fun off-topic stuff, because we have so much dead time and a ton of free range to explore different, you know, different talking points, and then look forward at the season to come, sort of give predictions as far as how successful the Clippers will be, what the Western Conference playoff picture will look like, who's going to get minutes, who's going to have a breakout year, that sort of thing. So if you have any things, you know, anything that you want to hear about in those sort of three veins, evaluating the offseason that the Clippers had, fun, off-topic, random stuff, you know, looking at Clippers history, whatever, during the dead period, and then looking forward and kind of predicting the season to come and speculating on what's going to happen, be sure to reach out with me with those ideas, because I've got a lot of space to fill in the next couple months. And, you know, I'm not going to I'm not going to sit here and make stuff up that I don't think is fun to talk about. So if I don't have a good idea, I just won't have an episode that day. So if you think you have a good idea, and I think it's a good idea, then that'll give me more reasons to do more episodes during the off season, which I know is fun for everyone. So if you have ideas, hit me up, Twitter at Lucas J. Han, email lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com. Tell me your ideas, tell me comments, questions, feedback, all that stuff. Be sure to check out the Clips Nation blog, where we're still on top of any late developments in the Clippers free agency hunt, www.clipsnation.com, and follow along on Twitter at ClipsNationSBN. Thanks for listening, guys. This is Lucas Han signing off for Locked On Clippers.